A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be delving into what Steve Dettelbach had to say when he was on CBS Face the Nation on Sunday, an extensive interview. Tom Knighton covered some of the ATF director's comments at Bearing Arms this morning, but there was a plethora of things to discuss, including Dettelbach's reluctance to weigh in great detail on the bump stock challenge that the Supreme Court heard last week. No, he would rather talk about something else. And again, an extensive conversation with the CBS, a lot of revealing topics beyond the issue of bump stocks and quote-unquote ghost guns and things of that nature. We'll also be covering a armed citizen story for you later on in the show, as well as our recidivist report and our good deed of the day. But let's start with Dettelbach's comments. One of the interesting things was, again, there were no tough questions for Dettelbach. Nothing about, you know, every one of these rules that has been proposed since you became ATF director has been challenged in the courts, and at least one court in the country has found problems with the infamous for unfinished frames of receivers or the pistol stabilizing brace. No tough questions at all about that. It was mostly softballs lobbed at Dettelbach's way, including the question of, well, you know, what's the most important priority for you as ATF director? What would you like to see? And by the way, Dettelbach did not give short, concise answers. I'm warning you that right now. You're going to be confronted with a wall of text here. He said, you know, so again, really, you know, people ask me, what's my top priority? What's my wish list? He says, I think the reality is it's going to be a lot of things that we have to do to get out of this situation to make things better. Keep in mind, by the way, he had just talked about how, yes, violent crime was declining last year, but no, things apparently aren't getting better. He said, we've talked about some of them, right? One of the things the president's talked about repeatedly is the idea of making it harder for criminals to get guns. It's the idea of background checks, right? Which stops every year thousands and thousands of people from getting firearms. Now, under the current law, he says, we have background checks for a whole host of people. And by the way, not everybody's following the current law. So number one, he says, is being better at enforcing the current law, right? But number two is if Congress wants to consider more on universal background checks, that is a program which he says has been shown to work. But again, he says, I mentioned a whole list of things. Help the people with mental health, state legislatures, not just Congress, are a huge part of this, equation. So state legislatures all around the country are considering various different measures. You know, as the head of ATF, you know, I think it's fair to say that for the agency that is the only federal law enforcement agency that solely deals with violent crime, if you're really concerned about violent crime in the United States, this agency is way, way too small. Now, first of all, I would say that the ATF is not the only agency that deals solely with violent crime, because the ATF doesn't deal solely with violent crime. The ATF, for instance, declared that possession of bump stocks is illegal. That's a possessory offense, right? Being a individual who possesses a unserialized buy, build, shoot kit. That's not a violent crime. But according to the ATF, you're violating the law. So I take issue with Dettelbach's characterization of the ATF as an agency. I also take issue with Dettelbach's characterization of universal background checks as something that actually works. As we've pointed out time and again, states that have put universal background checks on the books, like New Mexico, just don't have the numbers to show that those laws are being enforced. In fact, the first year that New Mexico's universal background check law was in place, not a single person was arrested or charged with transferring a firearm without a background check. Criminals, and by the way, violent crime continued to go up after universal background checks was in place, to the point that Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham said, well, the only way we can stop this is to, you know, ban concealed carry in Albuquerque and Bernalillo County. So, again, the idea that universal background checks is something that is going to solve this problem. Dettelbach said, well, you know, every year, thousands of people are stopped from getting a gun because they fail a background check. That might stop them from getting a gun legally or at retail, right? But that doesn't necessarily stop them from obtaining a firearm through straw purchases, through theft, through black market sales, and again, building their own, even if they are prohibited by law from doing so. So, again, there was an opportunity for some pushback on the part of Face the Nation, but host Margaret Brennan decided instead to lob another softball. So then she turned to bump stocks. And Dittelbach said, well, you know, that was before my time. You know, we'll do what the Supreme Court says, but that was really before my time. And he tried to talk about how, you know, Congress back in the 1930s wrote a law about machine guns, but acknowledged, you know, non-mechanical bump stocks clearly weren't covered because those weren't really a thing in the 1930s. Brennan asked, was this just a blind spot that it would be a problem? And Dettelbach said, no, I mean, there was, first of all, there was a provision in the ATF rule that dealt with this. And this is, we have a broader issue, right, with machine guns in this country that I will tell you is returning. And then Dettelbach tried to switch the conversation from bump stocks to switches. He said, he asked me about things that I think are really concerning for public safety. It's not just bump stocks, right? All over the streets of the United States, every police chief tells me that the pounding sort of jackhammer-like sound of machine gun fire is returning to our streets, and bump stocks is one. I'll show you another, right? So this little piece of plastic, which can be made on a 3D printer that costs $170 in about 45 minutes, this little piece of plastic is a machine gun. This is every bit as dangerous and covered as a Tommy gun, right? It goes into an AR, drops right in. It's called the auto sear, drops right into the AR, and turns it into a fully automatic weapon to operate the trigger one time and the gun keeps firing. And we're seeing police officers, we're seeing civilians be hurt by these things. So this case is before the Supreme Court. You know, it's pending, so I don't know how much I can talk about it, but the issue of a bump is more than bump stocks. It's about the fact that when Congress passed this law back in the 1930s and continues to go on. Now, what's interesting to me is that Dettelbach, again, really doesn't want to talk about the bump stock case. And I think, you know, he says he's not sure how much he can say. I think it's more, I'm not sure that there's much of a political purpose for Dettelbach to talk about bump stocks, because again, the issue is now squarely before the Supreme Court. So why bother talking about bump stocks? That issue is going to be resolved one way or the other. The ATF might like the conclusion of the Supreme Court. The ATF might not like the conclusion of the Supreme Court, but the Supreme Court is already set to weigh in. This, I think, is Dettelbach and, by extension, the Biden administration looking forward. Now, auto sears, Glock switches, those are already illegal under federal law. There is not a pending legal challenge to that provision, a federal statute that I'm aware of anyway, certainly not one that's been filed by any of the major Second Amendment groups. There might be a, you know, criminal defendant whose public defender is trying to make a Second Amendment claim, but I've not seen those cases. So if Dettelbach wants to talk about Glock switches and auto sears rather than bump stocks, but Glock switches and auto sears are also illegal, why? Why is he so interested in bringing the conversation around to that area? Now, I'm not saying we're going to see this tomorrow during Biden's State of the Union address, but I will note that gun control groups have been saying for several years that the ATF can and should reclassify semi-automatic firearms as machine guns because they are supposedly readily converted to fully automatic fire through the use of things like an auto sear. So this may be Dettelbach, again, trying to set the ground for a future ATF rule. Whether it would come during the course of Joe Biden's reelection campaign or if Joe Biden is elected in November, I think remains to be seen. But I think this is laying the groundwork for another further intrusion by the ATF, this one going after semi-automatic firearms directly, saying that, again, they're readily converted to fully automatic machine guns. Therefore, they should be treated as machine guns under the National Firearms Act. Whether they would go after every semi-automatic firearm in existence, whether they go after the most popular semi-automatic firearms in existence, I think that remains to be seen. But I definitely think that there is an appetite to use the ATF's rulemaking authority to go beyond the rulemaking authority, but to use that as the starting point to, in effect, enact a gun ban without a vote of Congress. We're already seeing this in terms of background checks, right? The engaged in the business rule that's being proffered by the ATF would dramatically expand who the agency believes is engaged in the business of selling firearms, to the point that even offering a single firearm for sale, not even completing that sale, the ATF says could be evidence that you need a federal firearms license. And if you don't have one, then you need to go to an FFL before you complete that transaction and put the buyer through a background check. They're willing to, again, bypass Congress to try to get as close to universal background checks as possible, which was Joe Biden's stated intention. Then why wouldn't they do the same? Why wouldn't they bypass Congress to get as close to a semi-auto ban as they think they can get away with without involving the legislative branch? There was one other comment that Dettelbach made towards the end of his interview that I wanted to highlight, because it stands out as so directly opposed to everything that Dettelbach was talking about up to that point, right? We need more money. We need to do more. Give me more gun control laws, both at the federal, state level. We'll take whatever we can get. And then he was asked about, he was in Lewiston, Maine recently, and he talked about meeting some of the victims of the Lewiston shooting. And he said, so, I mean, and on the other hand, he said, people have very passionate feelings about their Second Amendment rights, right? I sat in a room in Lewiston, Maine last week with families and survivors of the mass shooting that happened in Lewiston a couple of months ago. And there were people in that room, first of all, a tremendous grief, unspeakable frustration and anger. There were people in that room who had really different views on these sorts of policy questions, right? Everything from how can somebody get a weapon like this in this country to, you know, the solution is not the weapons. And we're not teaching respect, you know, among our young people. But I really value my weapons in the same room weeks after they've lost a brother or a father or been shot themselves, right? Those people were able to, sit in that room with all of that grief and have a discussion. So I think it's important to at least acknowledge that Dettelbach recognized that you can go through a tragedy, you can be a part of something like this and not walk out of it a gun control activist. Now, what he does with that knowledge is a very different question, right? But the gun control lobby in this country believes that there is only one appropriate way to respond if you lose a loved one to a shooting, whether it is a armed robbery, whether it is a targeted attack like what we saw in Lewiston, Maine. But really, there's only one appropriate way for you to think and feel and act afterwards. And that is to reject the right to keep and bear arms, to demand more gun control laws. And if you don't fit in that box, the gun control lobby has no use for you, right? They may feel bad for you, but they're certainly not going to acknowledge your opinion. They're not going to acknowledge your side. As soon as you speak up against any gun control proposal, well, then, my God, you must be a tool of the gun lobby, right? They will find a way to diminish your viewpoint. And I think it was interesting that in that room that Dettelbach talked about, where people on both sides of this issue share in their grief, but were able to have this, you know, conversation, even though they don't agree on the solutions, I think there was only one media entity that was invited there. I think it was the Associated Press. And I don't believe any gun control groups or any Second Amendment organizations were part of that discussion. And yet, despite the fact that there were no, you know, representatives of the gun lobby in that room, you still had Mainers who said, listen, the answer here isn't more gun control. This guy was off of his rocker. He had, neighbors, family, coworkers, fellow soldiers, all of whom were reporting that there were threats. He was taken to a mental health facility, spent several weeks in a mental health facility, but apparently that didn't trigger Maine's involuntary commitment law when he got out and returned home, and there were still a lot of concerns about his mental state, didn't trigger Maine's yellow flag law for that matter. So why are we now talking about, you know, waiting periods or universal background checks or gun bans when this could have been prevented had the government actually acted on the information that it had? Now, Dettelbach didn't get into that, right? He didn't want to get into the failures of government. But he did at least, again, acknowledge that you can be the victim of a violent crime. You can lose a loved one. And it doesn't mean that you automatically are going to turn around and support gun control. Again, what does Dettelbach do with that information? Probably nothing at all, to be honest, because it doesn't fit the anti-gun narrative. And Joe Biden is intent on turning the ATF into a gun control group with government powers. So maybe Dettelbach will keep that in the back of his mind as he is doing his job going forward, that, hey, you know what, there are two different schools of thought here. But I don't think so. I think his position, and that of the position, certainly the position of the gun control lobby, is even if you don't agree with what we want to do, in fact, especially if you don't agree with what we want to do, you are perfectly free to express your opinion, and we are free to completely ignore it. Now, Dettelbach speaking on Sunday, I don't know if this was prompted by Joe Biden's State of the Union address, but, you know, when Biden lays out his vision for the year to come, as well as looking back at what just happened, I expect we are going to hear Biden tomorrow tout the drop in crime. He's going to try to take credit for the drop in crime that we've seen in a lot of cities around the country in 2023. He will say that it was the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act, maybe the White House Office of Gun Violence Prevention, that led to this double-digit decrease in homicides in most U.S. cities. Don't believe it. Don't believe it. It is not any piece of federal gun control legislation in Washington, D.C. that led to this, you know, historic decline in violent crime. You can look at the decisions by a lot of city councils to pull back from the defund the police movement. Even cities like Washington, D.C. are now, you know, talking about getting tough on crime. But I think maybe the most important factors were the reopening of the courts. Certainly they didn't start in 2023, but the court system is back to its normal dysfunctional self for the most part in many jurisdictions. You're not seeing cases that are being dismissed to the degree that they were a couple of years ago because these cases were so slow in going to trial. In some cases dismissed because there was a lack of public defenders. And so these cases were hanging on for, you know, months or years. When you've got even a semi-functional criminal justice system, the consequences for criminal actions become more of a possibility. And we know that when there are consequences for those actions, that does tend to have a reduction in crime. When people know that they can't get away with these crimes, they commit fewer of these crimes. So the criminal justice system, and look, we talk about how dysfunctional it is every day on this program, still not in great shape, but it is better than it was a couple of years ago. And as I wrote this weekend, you know, gun control activists were actually predicting that violent crime is going to increase as a result of things like constitutional carry in Florida and Ohio and Georgia, and none of that happened. So they can try to take credit for the decline in violent crime. But remember, they were predicting the opposite would happen as more Americans were able to exercise their right to bear arms for self-defense without the need for a government-issued permission slip. I am curious to see if Joe Biden will announce any new gun control proposals. We know he's going to call for a gun ban, right? He does that basically in every public setting. We know that he's going to call for universal background checks. He's probably going to call for the repeal of the Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act. But I'm curious to see if there'll be anything of substance that is new coming from Joe Biden during the State of the Union address tomorrow when it comes to gun ownership and the Second Amendment. We will, of course, be covering that at bearingarms.com. As the speech is given on Tuesday night. All right, now let's turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a headline from the New York Post, Bail Fail. Study shows that repeat crime increased in New York because of justice reforms, quote unquote. Yeah, just like the Concealed Carry Improvement Act has led to fewer concealed carry licenses being issued in some jurisdictions. Yeah, the criminal justice reforms in New York don't seem to actually be making anybody any safer. Jim Quinn of the New York Post writes that there is a new study of bail reform outside of New York City, including the New York City suburbs and as well as upstate New York, prepared by the John Jay College of Criminal Justice's Data Collaborative for Justice, hardly a right-wing think tank, right, shows that 66% of the people who were arrested under bail reform, who had a recent prior arrest, were rearrested within 2 years of their release. The study also showed that 67% of defendants who had a recent prior violent felony arrest in the past year, who were released under bail reform, were rearrested within 2 years of their arraignment, and almost half of those were rearrested for another felony. So in other words, New York's bail reform laws do not appear to have cut the recidivism rate, despite claims to the contrary by folks like New York City Comptroller Brad Lander, who says that only 1% of people released on bail under bail reform are rearrested for a violent felony while their case is pending. State Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins said the number was 2%. Unless New York City is some kind of major outlier, that does not appear to be the case. That, again, a plurality, if not a majority, of those individuals who have been arrested for either felony offenses or, in particular, violent felony offenses have gone on to be rearrested. And again, about half of those for other felonies. Now, as Quinn points out, this study tries to make the case that bail reform is a success, oddly enough. They write, across all of New York State, bail reform tended to reduce recidivism for people facing less serious charges and with limited or no recent criminal history. But those folks, I would argue, are the folks who are less likely to reoffend in the first place. So if you take a group that is less likely to go on to commit another violent crime after they've been arrested, and you say, well, look, I mean, they were even less likely to do so after the bail reform. But the people who, again, that small portion of society who are the most prolific offenders were enabled by these reforms to quickly get out of jail and go on to commit further crimes. On balance, does that mean that these reforms have been successful or have been a good thing? Those who were, again, less likely to reoffend in the first place are even less likely now, but those who are more likely to reoffend are even more likely to do so now? I don't think too many New Yorkers would say that that's a great bargain to strike. And again, what we're seeing here is that the career criminals, the most prolific criminals, have benefited by these reforms. And, you know, the folks who might commit a minor offense, folks who really do might do something that is, you know, extraordinarily out of character for them. Those are the ones who might benefit from bail reform. Okay. Good for them, I suppose. But I think the average New Yorker far more worried about those prolific repeat offenders who appear to be emboldened as a result of the state's reforms. Now, today's Armed Citizen story, and this is a sad one. You know, I say all the time, carrying a firearm, using a firearm in self-defense, it is not a guarantee that you're going to walk away unscathed. It is not a suit of armor, but it provides you the chance, at the very least, the chance to fight back. And unfortunately, in North Carolina, an armed citizen who defended himself and his family against armed home invaders has passed away after somebody fired back during this attack over the weekend. According to authorities, this was in Orange County, North Carolina. It was early Sunday, just after midnight, about 12:30 in the morning. Three armed men broke into a home, demanded money. The three people were all in the home at one time. One of them apparently was shot at by the homeowner who had a shotgun, Jerry Lee Driggers, age 58. One of the intruders returned fire, striking Driggers, before all three men ultimately fled. Driggers was taken to Duke University Hospital, where he unfortunately passed away during surgery. The other two residents of the home reported being held at gunpoint, but said that they were not physically harmed, according to the sheriff's office. Deputies were able to arrive there about 12:40 Sunday morning. When they got there, they found Driggers with gunshot injuries. They found one of the intruders in the parking lot of a business not far away. 28-year-old Clarence Brandon Hayes had a gunshot wound to the abdomen and underwent surgery at a nearby hospital. Hayes has now been charged with first-degree murder, first-degree burglary, first-degree kidnapping, felony conspiracy, and injury to real property. Still hospitalized as of yesterday, according to the sheriff's office. Sheriff Charles Blackwood called the crime a, quote, isolated incident. Said deputies had no reason to think that the two men were still in the immediate area. He says, we'll continue to investigate, seeking to determine their identities and take them into custody. And this is a tragic situation. And again, it is a reminder that simply carrying a firearm or having one on a person for self-defense does not make you bulletproof. It does not ensure that you will walk away unharmed while your attackers go to jail or to the morgue. I will say, and I know that this is probably no comfort at all to the family, Mr. Driggers, but by his actions and his ability and his willingness to act in self-defense, not only did he protect his family from harm, but he actually shot one of the suspects, leading police to make an arrest and hopefully continue the investigation to the point that the other two suspects will be found and justice will be done here. If Mr. Driggers had simply cooperated, everybody in that home could easily have been killed. Police might not have any information on who the suspects were. But because Mr. Driggers was ready and able to fight back, one of his attackers has now been identified, will be in custody once he's released from the hospital. And again, hopefully there is the opportunity for police to arrest the others who are involved with Mr. Trigger's death. And again, I know it's a small comfort, if a comfort at all at this point. But though Mr. Trigger's lost his life in this home invasion, I would say that he saved the lives of his family members. And for that, I know we have our good deed of the day, but I would say for that, Jerry Lee Driggers died a hero. Now, on to today's formal good deed of the day. A story out of Michigan, where a former NFL player in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing to save an elderly man from being attacked in a YMCA locker room. Yeah. You know, people just are so quick to freak out about everything these days. Braylon Edwards was at the Farmington Family YMCA last Friday. He's in the locker room after work. He said, I basically hear about four rows behind me arguing about music and how it's being played too loud. He says, I'm not paying attention. I'm just minding my business. He said, but the noise escalates and then you can hear some pushing and shoving. So you know what fighting sounds like. But once I hear a thud, he said, that's when I got up and I turned around. Braylon Edwards says, I see this guy, for what I was thinking was reaching for a phone underneath the victim, grabs the back of the victim's head by the hair. He was about to slam it down on the counter. Now, the guy in question, 25 years old, his victim, 80 years old. And that's when Braylon Edwards stepped in. He says, I didn't know it was that serious. He said, I mean, the victim probably had a serious concussion by nature, but it wasn't until I talked to the detective down in Farmington, who told me if I didn't step in, but at the end of the day, that's what you do. The 25-year-old suspect initially fled the YMCA on foot. He has been arrested, remains in custody. At this point, I don't think he's been identified. The 80-year-old man did receive some injuries in this attack, but it looks like, thankfully, he is going to recover over what was, again, a stupid argument. Turn on your music. No, your music's really loud. I don't care. All right, you're in a public place. There are other people around. You know what? Turn your music down. What's the big deal? Put on your headphones. Turn the music up as loud as you want. Nope. Apparently, none of those options were amenable to this young suspect who decided instead to attack an octogenarian. Thankfully, again, Braylon Edwards, former NFL All-Pro, Michigan Wolverines football legend, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing to help this elderly man in need. And I thank him for his very, very good deed. Now, that is all the time we've got for you on this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. Again, we will be keeping our eyes on the State of the Union address tomorrow at BearingArms.com. But make sure you check out the website today for the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. Keeping you up to date all day long. If you like what you see, I'd encourage you to become a VIP or VIP Gold member as well. Just go to BearingArms.com/subscribe. Use your promo code GUNRIGHTS or Save America, too. That works as well. You get a significant savings on your VIP or VIP membership. We're going to give you exclusive content you won't find anywhere else. Because your support really does matter and it truly does make a difference. So thank you again. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. As good as a Monday can be, anyway. I'll see you back here tomorrow for 2A Tuesday. Until then, be well. Be safe. And be free.